Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Husky Nation News right here on WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. This broadcast is in collaboration with the UConn newspaper, the Daily Campus, and UConn student-run TV station, UCTV. I'm your host this week, Kate Arellano, and I'm here to give you the news of the University of Connecticut from this week. On Sunday, the Undergraduate Student Government Governing Board passed a vote of no confidence in the current USG president, Junior Michael Hernandez. News editor Taylor Harton reports for the Daily Campus that the vote comes after a proposed free speech bill that he supports, as well as alleged comments he has made to students in the last few weeks. The bill was introduced by sixth semester junior Isidore Johnson and calls on UConn to adopt the Chicago Statement, a free speech bill aimed at protecting the right to free speech on college campuses. The vote of no confidence reads, "Over the past several weeks, President Hernandez has acted in a manner unbecoming of the office he holds, which is manifested in an apparent inability to understand the impact that his actions have and a disregard for the concerns repeatedly brought to him by those he leads." Harton reports that Hernandez also allegedly made a comment to another student this week, saying that the protection of minorities is like treating them like children. This incident was a large part of the reason that the statement was issued. A petition is circulating around the UConn community to implement an anti-racist general education plan. Rachel Phillipson reports to the Daily Campus that the Honors for Diversity program, UConn Collaborative Organizing, the Academic Committee of USG, and the UConn NAACP proposed a plan to require all UConn students to take a one-credit, first-year anti-Black racism course. The second initiative of this plan aims to add two general education courses to the General Education Oversight Committee's General Education Plan to address the correlation between societal institutions in the country and diversity, inclusion, and social justice. Phillipson reports that Brittany Diaz, the candidate running for the Chief Diversity Officer of USG, says, "It is not enough for students to just take one class on anti-racism. It is important that students connect what they have learned with the anti-Black racism class to other societal issues and areas as well." The petition can be found in the Instagram bio of @collaborativeorganizing. The CLAS Student Leadership Board held an open Zoom meeting on Monday to allow students to voice their frustrations about the semester. Jordana Castelli reports for the Daily Campus that students talked about money and mental health, as well as the difficulties of online learning. Leasia Gaskin, 8th semester Women's Gender and Sexuality Studies major, says, "We are doing things like this to get information from students about different topics that are going on, so we can go back and talk to the dean about it." One student complained of her and her peers never getting email responses from their professor. Gaskin sympathized with this sentiment, saying that after reaching out to multiple professors about a loss in her family, she heard radio silence. Castelli reports that this event came as part of a larger student voice project, and team members on the project are still interested in hearing about student experiences and thoughts on the semester. Governor Ned Lamont announced a new vaccine rollout plan early this week, and the UConn community has some mixed feelings about it. Grace McFadden reports for the Daily Campus that one student, Sarah Hill, says the change to a staggered schedule based solely on age erases those who are young with underlying health issues. Hill said, "This change is frustrating because it almost seems to imply that high-risk individuals or individuals with underlying health issues that put us at a higher risk for COVID are just in the older age groups, which is not true." University spokesperson Stephanie Reitz said that the higher education staff are also currently ineligible for the vaccine under this new plan, while pre-K through 12 teachers are eligible. She said UConn will adjust its rollout plan as it sees fit to mirror the plans of the state. A UConn student has taken on the task of creating a new app to make doing laundry on campus much easier. News correspondent Selena Daigle has the story.
Imagine the disappointment of gathering laundry, bringing it all of the way downstairs or to the laundry building, just for there to be no washing machines or dryers open. It's a truly terrible feeling for many students. In an attempt to fight this constant occurrence, Aditya Dubey, a sixth semester computer science engineering major, set out his sophomore year to create an application that is universally available on Apple and Android products that can keep track of the use of all of the washing machines and dryers in each laundry room across the University of Connecticut campus. 2 years ago, Dubey, along with a team of two others, received funding from the university to automate the laundry rooms in Buckley and Chippy. They installed sensors in both the washing machines and dryers and hung flyers with a QR code to access a webpage that would show which machines were in use and which were not. After some consideration, they realized that it wasn't quite feasible and that the team wasn't yet educated enough in that sphere of technology to make this an accomplished project. As that project died down, Doobie took a step back to further his studies in CSE. By the end of his sophomore year, he had redesigned his project and began to work on it once again. However, this time solo. His new design consists of a user-friendly web application universally accepted by all types of smartphones or laptops. Upon opening the webpage, there are four options to choose from: Laundry Update, Laundry Check, User Guide, and About Me. To see which machines are open and which are in use, and for how long they will be in use for, simply choose Laundry Check and choose a building. The only catch to this new application is that it relies on the machine user to keep it up to date. When selecting a washer or dryer, a student needs to select Laundry Update, the name of the laundry room, the machine type, enter its identification number, and enter the amount of time it will be in use for.
I definitely want to make a campus fight.
In order to accomplish this, though, he's asking for the help of the student body to email him the washing machine and dryer IDs in each laundry room to update his web app. In the past, there have been two other attempts to make similar applications, but neither took off. Doobie has hopes that his will, given that
half the college is going to be almost new, if you think about it, like all the sophomores and the freshmen.
With this occurring, he's working alongside UConn Residential Life to help integrate the use of this application into the daily lives of the student population. It will hopefully become a habit amongst the younger Huskies to fill out a laundry update form each time they use a washer or dryer. According to Doobie, he's ready to let his application loose and see what happens with his project. From WHUS News, I'm Selena Daigle.
Now here is your weekend weather forecast. Today will be mostly sunny with a high near 32 and wind gusts around 15 miles per hour. And tonight will be partly cloudy with a low around 16. Moving into tomorrow, we'll see sun on Saturday with a high near 30, and the evening will be mostly clear with a low around 15. Sunday will be sunny again with a high near 33, and Sunday night will remain clear with a low around 18. Hang tight, we will be right back.
Thanks for listening to your local college radio station, WHUS Stores 91.7 FM, keeping it weird since 1922.
As we move into our discussion segment of the show, please note that, from this point forward, the views and opinions expressed on this WHUS News Department show are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily the views of the staff, management, or licensee of WHUS Radio or the University of Connecticut.
Hi, I'm Susan Forbes Hansen. I've been a member of WHUS for over 40 years now, and sort of a member of the folk music community for all that time, being involved in various coffee house events and emceeing concerts and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And currently I host folk shows on two stations in Connecticut. At one point I was up to three, but they come and go.
As everything does.
As everything does.
So tell me about how you got started with WHUS 40 years ago in the very beginning of your time here.
The very beginning of my time at WHUS started on February 11th, 1979. That was, I had heard an announcement about a training program for the station on WHUS. And it seemed like something I was now finally going to be brave enough to try. I've been a pretty shy person, but I was now teaching in front of a high school class, and I wasn't so shy anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought I would come out and try it. So I went out, and I remember the date because it was also the birthday of a singer friend.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought her LP with me to give to the station's library.
Oh, okay.
So that's how I always remember exactly what the date was.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first of the training sessions that I went through, which were quite convoluted in those days. There were several sessions and an exam and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see. So my first duties at the station were mainly fill-ins. I was teaching, so I had summers quote off unquote.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was able to go out and do a classic show or a rock show or whatever. And I think by the end of the summer, yes, it was August of 79, that the man who had been doing the folk show resigned his job there, and I was eligible. I'm on the air, yes. I was eligible and got the show, and there you go.
And the rest was history.
The rest is just fabulous history.
So, you know, the last year or so has been absolutely crazy, and I'm not sure if you've experienced anything like this in the 20 years that you have been on air.
40.
My apologies. Yeah. Numbers are all relative nowadays.
Yeah, but, exactly. It's just so amazing to me.
I know. The fact that a year has gone by is blowing my mind.
It is. What I've been telling you, Rody, is this has been my gap year.
Yeah.
Because I haven't been on the air. A number of hosts have been able to get up to speed in terms of recording shows and sending them in. And I have not gotten that far yet. I'm trying to pull together stuff. But it's been a very strange year watching what's going on from the sidelines, whereas I've always been really involved in the station.
Yeah.
In the previous number of years.
So what has it been like for you being on the sidelines, watching the station try to resume normal operations during the middle of the pandemic, and just, you know, being on the sidelines of seeing a pandemic happen overall?
Well, overall, my goodness. None of us alive, I think, or very few of us alive, know anything about the previous one 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a little kid, there was concern about polio. You know, so that when the polio vaccine came along, it was considered, it was a lifesaver.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember one child in my generation dying of polio. So, I mean, and that was nothing like what we're seeing now. Nothing like it.
Mm-hmm.
It was horrendous in its own size, but the scope was nothing compared to this. And so it's affected everything. It's affected everyone's lives. It's affected just everything, economy and politics and personal lives and so forth. And of course, it has affected music and musicians and music radio and music presenters and so forth.
How has it affected you personally as a radio host?
Well, it's very frustrating. Not having had the skills to record the show. As I say, I've started, you know, collected bits and pieces. I got a new laptop and started getting stuff, but because I'm not a real good self-starter about this kind of thing, where I don't know anything about it, it's been really small baby steps. So I'm hoping to get there. I'm hoping, well, first of all, I'm hoping that the station's open, that life opens soon, but I'm hoping to get to a point where I can be recording pretty soon.
Of course.
I'm collecting the CDs and downloading the songs and such.
I'm sure you'll definitely have a great library of music to choose from when we all get back, now that you've had all this time to right. to prep what you want to pull. So how have you been keeping busy not being able to record during your gap year?
Well, I would like to say that I've spent it in very positive and constructive ways, and there have been a few days like that.
Mm-hmm.
I've been pretty lazy, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I've done constructive things. I've built a fence, and on nice days back in the good weather, I would ride my bike or I would take my kayak out.
But,
and one day I pulled some cross-country skis down from the attic, which I have never used, and I tried them in the backyard, and I thought, well, I'm very rusty, so I'm going to need to spend a little time doing that. So anyway, reading articles online from good sources, you know, getting a subscription to The Atlantic and reading the magazines that I get at home and trying to read books and having a little harder time focusing.
Yeah.
Than I normally do, but that's probably getting more into detail than is necessary.
No, that's quite all right. And I think a lot of people can resonate with how you're feeling with you. You want to say that you were productive and constructive and taking on new projects, but how could anyone do that in such a time of uncertainty and loss and fear? And so I don't blame you, and I don't blame anybody who really just sat down with a book or, you know, rode their bike, did things they needed to for their mental health. I think that's productive in and of itself.
Well, yeah, and I ride my exercycycle while I watch movies. That's thank goodness for that. You know, a couple of hours, 20 miles and a couple of hours and lost in a whole different world. And that's been helpful.
There you go.
As well. Yeah.
So.
No,
continue.
But just when the weather was good, a friend could come sit in the yard with mm-hmm. me, you know, and we'd sit at a proper distance and you could chat, but it's been a little chilly for that.
Oh my goodness. The wind has been absolutely unbearable lately.
Yeah. And I love snow, but that wind and the cold, that was a little bit much the other day.
I think it was yesterday or the day before we woke up and it was -11 with a wind chill. And I don't think I've ever seen numbers that low in my almost 21 years of living in Connecticut.
Wow.
It was crazy. Because you know That's stores. Hard. We're basically an entire wind tunnel.
Right.
Yep. So I do want to talk a little bit more about your show so that our listeners can kind of see what it's about and see if it's something they'd be interested in. So tell me how that came to fruition and what it's about, what kind of music you play, guests that you might have. You know, talk to us about it.
Okay. When I started, I just started drawing on my own, in those days, LP collection and the station's LP collection, because there is one there mm-hmm. at HUS, obviously, because there had been a folk show prior to my hosting it. And so I was just kind of feeling, you know, finding my footing. As time has gone by, I try to cover a pretty wide range because the name folk covers a pretty wide range of music from, you know, anything from Native American music to European music to music from early African Americans coming here bringing a banjo, you know. I mean, that's putting it very simply. It's much mm-hmm. more complicated than that. But I've tried to bring in a lot of different parts of it, not just when I was in college. Folk music was really kind of pop music. It was the Kingston Trio and Peter, Paul, and Mary, and they were pop stars really as much as folk musicians. But they drew from some of the people who wrote the stuff. In other words, I learned about Pete Seeger and Woody Guthrie from the Kingston Trio and Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I was able to, I was introduced to the people who were writing the real stuff and having the real experiences of a folk writer and so forth. Not just from the people on the stage who were singing the other people's songs, but from the real folks, if that makes any sense at all.
No, it does. It does.
And went to some of the earlier Newport Folk Festivals, got to see some of the early stars there. You know, people like a woman whose name has escaped me at the moment. Okay. And a woman named Elizabeth Cotton, nicknamed Libba Cotton, who brought in some songs that have become very much a part of the folk genre. And she was, quote, discovered, unquote, because she was a maid for the Seeger family,
mm-hmm.
Pete Seeger's half-sisters and so forth. So, I mean, the you just find out so much, so many bits and pieces, and you follow another little trail and another little path. One of the things that I very much enjoy doing is pulling themes together, because folk music is so thematically oriented. Mm-hmm. I mean, people have always told stories through music, and those stories have not only been about Oh Baby Baby, and some of the Oh Baby Baby songs are wonderful, but that's not what all the songs have been about, and that's not what life has all been about. Mm-hmm. So having been introduced to some of the people who sang about their real lives, that really touched me and made me want to find out more. So as I say, I will go in search of songs about specific issues, or mm-hmm. if I will play songs on an artist's birthday, because maybe they have been neglected for a while. Mm-hmm. What else? It is always great fun to have people come into the studio live.
Of course.
Yeah. There's a band now that is going through some changes. Now they started out called Poor Old Shine, and they changed their name because that was considered pretty politically incorrect, because that referred to black workers in cotton fields or on steamboats. And so they changed their name to Parsons Field. Mm-hmm. And they did their first radio show ever, because they were UConn students. They did their first radio shows ever on my show, on our station.
That's awesome.
Which was awesome. I mean, and to watch these guys, you know, grow and change and become really popular has just been mm-hmm. such fun. Just, you know, you sort of feel like, oh, my nephews. You know?
Yeah, like I knew them when.
I knew them when. Yeah. But then I've also had the chance to interview some very well-known people. Kathy Mattea came into our studio. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that name means anything to you, but she's been a country folk star for a long time.
That's so cool.
It is. And many years ago, somehow, I ended up interviewing Odetta in her New York City apartment. Mm-hmm. Again, another name that might not be familiar to younger listeners, but she was going to sing at Obama's inauguration and unfortunately passed away.
Oh, wow.
A few months before. But she was a woman who had started, an African-American woman who had started out singing classical music with this big, powerful voice, and then kind of moved over into more of the folk genre. And so she sang the historic stuff mm-hmm. and the songs of the workers. But she also sang, and blues, but she also sang the political stuff and the sort of popular stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there in this woman's apartment thinking, I'm in heaven. I have died and gone to heaven. You know, how did this happen to me?
Yep.
You know, it's just so wonderful.
It really is beautiful, the doors that can open to different communities and different people at WHUS. And I think that's something that is so special about this station and about this community as a whole, really.
Oh, my goodness, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, part of the reason that Mateo was able to come in was because she was playing at Jorgensen that weekend.
Oh, well, there you go.
So there you go.
Yep.
You know, and so the campus itself brings in amazing people.
Oh, absolutely. It's...
And sometimes, sorry.
No, you go ahead. Go ahead.
Arlo Guthrie's daughter came in one day, again, because the family was playing on campus that weekend. Mm-hmm. So it's just been really wonderful to have access to the musicians themselves as well as to their music.
Absolutely. So the last thing that I wanted to talk to you about before I let you go, you know, 40 years of memories of ups and downs and a pandemic to tie it all together. What have been some of your greatest moments at WHUS throughout the years?
Personal greatest moments have been able to hold anniversary concerts. I had a few of those, a couple on campus and a couple at Cheney Hall in Manchester. I don't know if you know that hall. It's a really lovely place. Mm-hmm. That personal stuff. The station itself, it's been amazing to watch it. You know, to be an outsider in a sense, an insider-outsider, because I'm not a student, a part of the community that has been allowed to be part of the station for all these years. Mm-hmm. And in my earlier years, we would have staff meetings that would go on for 4 hours. And there would be arguments and fights, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
It's been amazing. And having fun drives, we don't have to have them anymore. But when we had fun drives, we would, you know, we'd have a bunch of people in the room taking pledges and phones ringing and helping each other out. You know, we would all sit in with each other. And I've made some good friends there, and people that I still know, people who were students when I started there. Mm-hmm. Our friends, there's a painter who lives in Connecticut who was a student there. And other people, just various people who have stayed friends, even though they've left the station.
Yeah.
So it's been a wonderful place to find people.
That's the perfect way to put it. It really is a gift and a joy to be able to interact with the great people that, you know, on a weekly basis with the board and the members that are attending different meetings, but then also that greater UConn community, extending that to DJs and radio hosts just like yourself has been such a wonderful thing. And it's really just, like I said before, it's what makes WHUS so special.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Yeah. Well, that is all the time I have for you today, but thank you again so much for taking the time to speak with me. It has been a pleasure, and I know it's been a bit difficult getting this out there, but I'm very grateful for your time. So thank you so much, Susan.
Thank you, Kate.
I'd like to thank Susan once again for chatting with me this week. Hopefully her show, the Sunday Night Folk Festival, will be back on the air pretty soon. In the meantime, her previous show playlists are up on spinatron.com for those of you who would like to listen. Thank you to the Daily Campus and UCTV for collaborating with us as always, and thank you to Ethan Smith for our theme music. And thank you, listeners. I've been your host, Kate Arellano, and you are listening to WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. Have a lovely weekend, everybody.